Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about this all the time. The stigma is going away. It's important for us all to talk about our feelings, about our life with someone we can talk to, someone who's objective, who's a professional. So many people have done this. I've been doing this for a long time. It helps. Ryan here, well, you can't see him, but he uses BetterHelp. So many of my friends do, and it works for so many people. And we all carry around different stressors, big and small, and at times we keep carrying them around rather than processing them and letting them go. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy from BetterHelp is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. I know a lot of people think that. It's not for just those people. It's for all of us. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Talkville today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Talkville.
Welcome to Talkville, the ultimate Smallville rewatch podcast, where each week we go way back and we watch every friggin' episode of Smallville, a show that changed our lives forever and perhaps your lives too. I'm Michael Rosenbaum.
Hello, I am Tom Welling.
And I am Ryan Tejas. I am also here.
Welcome to the early 2000s.
You can see clearly now. I couldn't before because I was so involved and so right in the middle of it all. We all were. But you can see what a difference a good guest star makes and what a bad guest star makes.
Well, there's something that I try to remind myself, and I've said this before, but I'm working on the show Winchester's now, but your job as a visitor is to bring an opinion. You know what I mean? You have to show up, your character has to show up with an opinion. And that brings an energy, and that brings something that the real cast, so to say, can react to. Mm-hmm. You can't just show up and just, hey, I'm here. I'm just going to say my line. Amy's performance, what I get from it is like the commitment. Like there's no, like, I'm going to look. She wasn't concerned. She just played it. You know what I mean? Yeah. She owned every moment. And that's why her performance jumps out. And yes, she's gone on to do these other things. But what we're talking about is she was doing it then. I mean, she's a stand-up.
Did you notice that, like, she had to do some tough scenes, like those scenes where she's eating so much food and they're cutting, jump cuts. When you were at that lunch table, what was that like? Do you remember that?
I do remember kind of being like, I wonder how this is going to happen because I've never been in a scene like this. And I remember that they kept bringing this food away and she would eat some of it. She would eat some of it and then spit it out because you don't want to consume all that food because you're going to get sick. But there were so many beats to all that. But the whole time, I just saw Amy being so focused and not being distracted and just playing her character. And I was just like, wow, this, like you said, this girl knows what she's doing. Like, let's just stand back and watch.
Did you feel like she had any kind of, was she nervous at all? Was she anxious at all? Was she trying to please people? It was early on.
She was not. I can tell you she wasn't trying to please anyone. And I mean that in a good way.
Sure.
She was there to do her job. She was polite. She was, she was focused. You know, I think she had learned already that, like, your job is to come in and do your thing. Don't worry about all this. I mean, she was pleasant.
Right.
But she wasn't like, hey, what are you doing this weekend? Or none of that. No, she was there to do her job.
I got to hang out with her a little bit and she was wonderful. I thought she was fantastic. Just a wonderful woman and honest, obviously a great actress.
I think that Michael, who played Freezer Boy, as I remember we called him, tough role. tough role. And I think he did a good job of not, like, to be honest, like over, like sexualizing it, especially when everybody was calling his character that kind of guy.
Right. Really, it was about love and warmth
and wanting to feel, you know, this connection for human beings. I think that's the bigger or deeper
idea behind it. And I think that the way he played it, his trajectory was really good. He could have played every scene the exact same way.
I'm cold. I want heat. But there's nuances in there, especially there's, I'm jumping around, but he goes to see the school nurse and she takes his temperature and he takes the hand and he puts it on her, on his forehead. I mean, that's, he did that. I remember that was a choice he did. And that's like, you know, he was really good at connecting to what it, his character really needed.
Adam Brody. As
top
Justin
10,
Gaines.
Top 10 ever.
So good.
He's good.
So good.
He's got a weird voice, doesn't he?
Everything about like, him is weird. He was weird. He was weird to be around.
He was good.
He wasn't a weird person. His performance was, it was awkward. It was obtuse, but it was grounded. And like you believed everything he was saying. It was very
easy. I agree. Good actor, man.
And then not 2 years later would lead to a very similar role on the OC.
You got to suspend disbelief in a lot of these episodes. Suspend disbelief. Am I right, Tom? Suspension of disbelief. I guess you just have to suspend disbelief. The show became sort of like they would talk about, is it a Freak of the Week episode?
Yeah.
And that meaning that there was some kind of person that was affected by the meteor shower. Yeah,
we couldn't even say that.
That has a power. And people would say, oh, come on. Why is it always Freak of the Week?
Well, Amy Adams or something. Yeah.
Right. But exactly. But you understand, like in the first episode, this guy that's tied to the cross in the field. And they're picking on him. And then, you know, from the meteor shower, he develops some kind of power of electricity and he's able to use his power to get revenge on his on the people that caused him so much suffering when he was younger. And I think that you did need a Freak of the Week episode because especially when you're starting to understand who these characters are, we have to let them breathe a little bit and build what's called character development. And as the episodes grow, you start to get attached to these people. Then you can start getting into the sub-story. Well, then you can start getting into the sub-stories. But you need sometimes the Freak of the Week to kind of, for the B story, to keep things going. It's an hour show.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to write 22 episodes. Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know if they do that. This.
I don't know either. I think that's a big order now. I think
10 months a year we were filming the show, so it's like you had to have these freaks of the week until you could start developing, like, you know, getting into the red kryptonite and getting into Lex's past and all these things, and then we can go into their past and kind of the show was at its best when we went to the backstories of who these people are.
I think so.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that eventually, and I mean this, getting Alan Miles on here would be fun to like. Did they know? Did they really have a plan? Like, I don't know, because it seems like they did.
What's funny about these early episodes, watching them, is you kind of can see how the show starts to find its feet. You know, there's always the, which always drives me crazy, the Freak of the Week thing.
I know, and I say like, it too.
This is the thing you have to remember. Every show had a Freak of the Week. Supernatural had Demon of the Week. Buffy had Vampire of the Week. But because back in the old days, a avid viewer of a television show watched 1 in 4 episodes. So you're not doing what we're doing now, which is we do 8 episodes of a series. They're chapters of a book. 22 episodes, you're doing short stories in the world. And then you have some episodes that are mythology that can tie the whole season together. So it's kind of fascinating now to go back and watch.
The bug guy died. You saw those little bugs come out. I thought that was a really great effect. I thought that was really cool when he gets smashed at the end. Clark smashes him with the machinery and those bugs. Those bugs.
I feel like on this show, unless we had a scene.
I think he's dead.
Maybe didn't die.
How about Lana's parents? Can we safely say they both died in the pilot? I think that's safe to say they were blown to bits. By the way, we never talk about the but holy crap. I mean, they're like, hey, sweetie, how are you? My little 3-year-old. Boom. I'm getting a lot of comments saying that Greg didn't die. The bug guy didn't die and that he comes back in the homecoming at the season finale. So
come on.
Yeah. People were commenting.
I don't know this yet.
You wouldn't know. You haven't seen that episode yet.
I didn't remember anything. But, you know, fans are on top of it. Now, this is the scene I had the most problems with. Clark and Pete go to investigate Tina's antique store and discover Tina's mother hidden in an armoire and his X-ray vision.
with his x-ray vision. First of all, it's fine that you go, let's go in there. It's like, why? Well, I just have a hunch. Okay, I'll suspend disbelief on that. But then all of a sudden they go in, they open this thing, and the body's there, and Pete goes, damn, who's that? It was like, that's the reactions. Both of you are not that scared. It's a dead body. You're in Smallville. He's like, oh my God. Oh my God. The reaction. And they left that. They didn't want a bigger reaction. I was like, damn, who's that?
I made a note.
I was like, what the?
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He was always fun to work with. He always, you know, what I remember about Sam Jones III is he always worked really hard. He wanted to be good. He always wanted the scenes to be better. So I always appreciated that. And he was always concerned. He was always, hey, it's got to be better. Let me do it again. Pete goes to pick up Jody for the party. Oh, sweet Pete. When Jody feels a hunger fall over her, and to avoid eating Pete, someone who showed her compassion, leaves him hanging. Pete follows and nearly gets devoured by Jody until Clark rushes in.
So one of the biggest cliffhanger in this whole episode for me is she sends Pete away. Pete comes back and he's like, hey, let me help you. She's like, I don't want to hurt you. And Pete goes, you couldn't hurt her. And he doesn't finish his sentence because he sees her. I'm dying to know what was he going to say? You couldn't hurt a what?
You couldn't hurt a deer. No, like, that's not it.
He doesn't finish the sentence, and I'm watching the episode, and I'm like, man, what was he going to say? Like, he couldn't hurt a great guy like me?
Chloe and Pete break into Hamilton's lab, and an accident causes Pete to get sprayed by the Nicodemus flower. New badass Pete is now hell-bent on confronting Lex and violently acting on his vendetta. I really liked Sam. Sam did a great job.
Yeah, it was fun to see him, like, again, like, break out of sort of the Pete that we've grown to love, and, you know, just like the little friend, where this one he's, I don't know, I just, his passion was great.
Yeah, especially that scene with Chloe.
Yeah,
he just screams at her, and then the look on his face, he took his job seriously. When he was on set, he was always wanting to be, he was a perfectionist, he wanted to be great, and he worked really hard. He wasn't messing around. I always remember that. Give kudos to, you know, Alan Miles, the creators, and casting and all that, because the cast was really well cast. I mean, it was a really... Yeah.
I would say aside, you know, I mean...
Go ahead, say it, you smart ass. Aside from Lex Luthor. I know what he's doing. I know what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, this is a recurring theme that I go to, but I was the least experienced actor out of everybody. So, like, even Kristen had been on a television show. Allison would come in and be able to, like, do 10 things at once and say all this dialogue. And I was like, oh my God, she's amazing.
You know, Allison, she's a good actress. You know, she always did a great job. All of a sudden, Chloe's hysterically crying, going psycho on Lana for taking the editor she's going to hire Chloe so she could eventually take the job back. And she immediately loses her shit. Oh, so
cheerleading's not enough.
That scene just, I thought was misdirected. I thought Allison's great. She's a great actress, but I thought I would not have made her cry and go so crazy. I just felt like it was a little too much for me. It just felt like, why is she crying? Why is she so emotional that, you know, Lana did this, and not seeing she's a smart girl and she should understand what Lana's trying to do and trying to help her. Like, Lana wants to be fucking editor. Lana doesn't want to be fucking editor.
You think Chloe deserves more credit than to respond that that way.
Emotionally make herself look bad. Yeah. I felt like it was too much.
In the torch, at the end of a scene, she goes and she takes something off of Clark's shirt right at the end. And then later, after we get through the wind, she does the same sort of thing to Clark. She just touches him up a little bit, showing that she cares. And that's no way that was written. That was Allison pinning herself to the character's reaction. I thought that was a great acting move.
Chloe cracks the case from the hospital and tells Clark and Pete that she believe the bandits are able to manipulate their molecular composition to pass through objects because she's a God-blessed chemist.
I mean, she had a lot of time to think about it, meditate. I don't know.
They manipulate their molecular composition.
That's it. Case closed.
How did he become Bug Boy? And then Allison starts talking about the Wall of Weird. And you kind of piece it together in that scene. She spells it out for you. And there it is. That's why it's the meteor rock. And when you get a swarm of these insects, this is what happens. At times, it could be a little Hardy Boys. You know, I like that Chloe is more involved in the episodes. That becomes more apparent as we go along. But I think she does a really good job. Kyle proves it works by shaking Chloe's hand and convincing her to kiss Clark.
And I thought Allison nailed it even after that kiss, the way she's like, so prove it. And then she's, you know, she's just doing so much with her eyes.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic.
She did a great job with that scene. And so did you. Chloe arrives to the barn and apologizes to Clark for digging into his past. Before she leaves, she shares photos of the dead cows that she took in case they can use them for insurance purposes. Good thing one of these photos is a close-up headshot of CEP agent Jude. Chloe shows up to the Kent farm and shares a picture of Ryan's stepfather with Clark, who instantly recognizes him as Lex's limo driver. Why would... Weird. Was it awkward kissing Allison for the first time?
Well, you know, it's...
Because you're hanging out with, you guys are friends on set. It's like, you know, it's like she's playing your best friend in the show.
It's one of those perfect scenarios where it all works for the scene. And it's not a cop-out. You know, it's like, obviously there's no romantic thing, but like there wasn't between them either. So kissing your friend is awkward, and as it should be in that scene. So it was easy in that sense. That it was just awkward. I really like that scene between you and Kelly where you're both kind of one-liners back and forth and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's a kiss there. And you kind of almost anticipate either like the morning after or like a bedroom scene. But no, what happens is the next time we see you, you're in front of the fireplace, still in your office, but laying down romantically, like on the, like, you never leave your office.
I never noticed that.
Do you sleep? Are you a vampire? Like, what's going on?
I'm just a hard worker.
You're like, let's make out for a second, but hold on. Hold that thought. Let me start the fire. Let's sit down and talk on the floor.
Tom, I'm a very hard worker. Do you understand? I work hard. I work long hours in the office. You know, at this point, I think he's already tried to kiss Lana before Aunt Nell screws it up. I was like, oh my God, they're going to kiss. They are going to kiss, and they don't. And I'm like, good Lord. And when Nell goes in, I would have went right after it. She goes back inside. I don't know why Tom didn't say, hey, let's continue real quick. Let me give you a kiss goodnight or something. But no, old Clark Kent says, all right, I'll be respectful, completely respectful. I don't think it would have been disrespectful to give her a little kiss goodnight. No comment. Okay.
Well, she series said, and the series ends.
That night, Lana meets up with Clark in his bar and opens her heart, proceeding to make out with him. However, it turns out to be Tina shape-shifting as Lana, who then pushes Clark out of the barn and onto his truck. Now, this is a scene that I really liked. And, you know, everybody comes in the barn. Clark, it's your dad. Clark, it's your mom. Lana, everybody comes into this barn. Lex. It's like, dude, can I have some effing privacy here? I was pounding.
It's literally my fortress of solitude. And
everybody comes in there. But if you know Kristen, like Tom and I know Kristen, she's the extreme opposite from this portrayal that you can be. And it had to have been really hard for her to just.
She didn't. I remember this because it was so out of character. It wasn't like she was in the corner trying to figure it out. It's in there. She just turned it on. It was surprisingly, they would cut and she would just like relax and be like, whatever, Kristen. And then they'd go action and she'd turn into this sultry, aggressive, you know.
What were character. You as an actor? Was it kind of like, oh, this is awesome?
This is awesome because you can just when another actor is just doing it and being it, well, that's the easiest thing, especially if you're the character who's like, this isn't like you. Like, it was just, it made it simpler.
You know, a lot of actors will say, it's just work. It's there's nothing there. Bullshit. If Kristen Kreuk, one of the most beautiful women in the world, is playing this character and coming on to you, it doesn't get old. I don't care who you are, folks.
If she showed up at the Luther Mansion, Lex would be like, let's do one more, guys. One more take, please. One more take.
I thought she was on fire, and I was like, wow, great. I haven't seen her look like that. And she just looked like, it was like reminiscent of Olivia Newton-John in Grease at the end. You and Lana, your scenes are really good together. You guys have chemistry. It's just there. The both of you, it just looks like I could tell you like each other. It just seems right. And Lana confronts Clark for going against Whitney. I thought this was a little surprising. It was a little, you know, sticking up. You know, the episode before, she's so into Clark and all these things. And now, you know, she's defending, I guess, her boyfriend. I mean, they've made up, you know, at this point, Whitney's told her about the father and she feels for him. And now she goes after Clark saying, why would you choose, you know, this guy who lives in the middle of nowhere who, like, I fell off a horse and we don't know exactly what happened to, you know, why would you believe him over Whitney?
I think it was very good acting on Kristen's part, because I'm pretty sure she felt the same way.
I remembered the cards. I think it's because you couldn't remember your line.
The playing cards.
And I think it was written on the playing card.
What, six of hearts or whatever it is?
I couldn't remember. Yes, Tom, you wrote your lines on a card.
I was there, but I'm pretty sure there was something.
Yes, totally threw you under the bus. I love it. You used
Tom
one of the.
I couldn't remember his line. What card do I have?
So Tom's in a limo, guys, and he says pick a card, and then he says, "Oh, it's a three of hearts," and she's like, "Oh my gosh!" And you know he knows magic, but really he has X-ray vision.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being here, Kristen. It was really nice.
Kristen, it was a real treat.
Welcome.
I love it because Lana's like, "Oh hey, hi," and he's all creepy. She's like, would you like some coffee? Like the way she says coffee.
Coffee.
Would you like some coffee?
Let me get my bags. It's Victoria and her father. Mr. Hardwick just cracked me up.
Hey, Lex. Well, it looks like this. Your father.
Wow. She looks nothing like her father.
Oh, my gosh.
That accent. The fucking Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
I had to look it up. I was like, that is a terrible accent. He's Canadian.
He's not English.
He's not English at all, and I had to make sure. But yeah, that was something.
He was a really nice guy, I remember. He was a little nervous. I don't remember too much about him, but I remember doing that scene. I remember being up there and kind of having this, you know, playing this kind of game with them, you know, that Lex does, that kind of cat and mouse thing. But he was nice.
It is funny sometimes when you're doing a scene with somebody, especially if you don't know them. And there's rehearsals and everything else. And then you go to shoot one and someone does something and you just kind of go, oh, that's what you're going to do. Oh, okay. That's what you're going to do?
You're going to do.
All right. What I remember about that scene is it being such a long scene.
Like I was really nervous going into that scene.
It's a long scene with this love interest. You know, there's a lot going on. There's a point in there where I flub a line, but because of the shot, I guess they didn't have any other option. It's in there. I did like a double talk over my line,
and it's in the movie. Like
I don't remember that.
Oh yeah, I heard it. You said "don't" twice, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I didn't hear that
because they were trying to get so much of it in these long moving shots, and I guess they didn't have coverage, and they just had to use it. I mean, it kind of comes across as endearing, but I remember being like, "This is one of the longest dialogue scenes I've had so far."
So you were nervous because it was like you hadn't had to talk that much,
right? But here's the best part: Clark should be nervous at the same time. So I kind of tried to go with it.
Yeah, I think you did go with it. I think it works. Yeah.
And in the end, Clark has a line. I know it wasn't you because the real mastermind would have worn a mask.
And I remember Clark looks at you and you look at me and we start laughing. And
that was just us. That was you and me.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. You just had a big cheesy smile on your face.
Again, I think Annette was just so wonderfully perfect in this. The way she's thinking about her son, encouraging her son. And then Jonathan's like, hey, back off a little bit. But she's just so loving. I just love
her. She's amazing. But I felt like there was one moment where I thought she messed up a line. Like she flubbed it. Yeah. She said something like, she goes, blah, 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 the spring formal. like she forgot the word formal, but it's fine. No one else would know, but she's so good that I never notice anything but brilliance. And this one, I go, oh, there's a little bit of a, you know,
finally, flaw,
but they let
it go.
A
chink in the armor.
Yeah,
exactly. We'll bring her up if we have her as a guest.
I hope sometime we find some flaws with Annette O'Toole that we can talk about. Because it seems impossible at this
point. It's impossible.
She's pretty much on point.
And remember just like soaking up like how she moved and how she sort of, I don't know, how she just operated as an actor in that environment. I just remember like watching her as Clark was doing, but like just trying to soak up like her wisdom.
Yeah, she's a great actress, and it was always fun watching her and being on set with her. She took her work very seriously. She was always gentle and sweet and nice to be around, but she also took her work very seriously, whether she was saying a bunch of bullshit, spitting it out, or whether she had a monologue, but she was always there for the other actors. Back at the hospital, we find out Beals had died, and Martha fears Jonathan is next. This is by far one of the best acting moments on the show.
Yep.
It's by far Martha's best acting, Annette's. She was incredible. It seemed effortless. Like she was just in love with this guy. And the story she tells about meeting Jonathan, how she thought, I knew I was going to marry him. And I still think that today. And your look, like, oh my God. It was like, when you're acting with her, when she's going through that, are you amazed by what she's doing?
Dude, she makes it all so real. You know, if you look at those lines on a piece of paper, what she says in this scene, it's really cheesy. You know what I mean? But she could just make things real. She was the easiest person to listen to in a scene. She wasn't like saying lines. You know what I mean? She was just there with it.
I mean, I always thought she was a great actress, but when I watched that, now I'm like, wow, that was impactful. I was just blown away by her performance in that. And she didn't have a lot to do. And that moment was just breathtaking.
And there's a really great shot of Annette, Martha.
Yeah,
with Clark and Lana back. In her foreground. And her reaction to that is like priceless. As a mom, rooting for your son, wanting all these things for your son. And I thought that was a great beat. Annette did a great job. If you watch, she's running through
she's
the field.
Into
by
it.
The way, I know that field. That's a cattle. So that whole farm is a cattle farm. That field is not flat to run on. Okay. There's hoof prints everywhere. You can snap an ankle easily in that field. Annette's running her turn. And by the way, the swarm of bees, did it remind you of Hitchcock's The Birds?
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Her hair, she played it exactly the
way
same
she's
as
turning and like, yeah.
And when she finally turns, like everything is perfect. And then Annette, like, I don't know how much like CGI and stunts Annette has done, but dude, she nails every movement in that.
It was 20 years ago, so the effects are what the effects are. It was kind of a little bit like, eh. The cobwebs. I didn't think they looked very real on Lana. It looked like that, you know, that stuff you get at Halloween and you kind of rip it apart. It didn't look like a cobweb, but you know, I guess you let that go, right? Suspending disbelief.
Yeah, suspension of disbelief was a big theme in the show. You know, when Clark goes and reveals the mother in the cobwebs, I kind of remember being like, this is ridiculous and stupid, but maybe this is what cobwebs look like. Yeah, like I convinced myself.
The technology that we were able to use on the show became affordable for a television show and not just a film.
Right, yeah.
Like literally that year, the visual effects it just happened to be. Like if we had done the show a year earlier or a year later, it would have been a different show.
Right.
It was literally that year where the studio was open to it to spend money. And the more that we did the visual effects, the more the price came down, which was a weird thing. Because I remember there was something we did in season one that was like $50,000. By like season five, it was like, we'll just do it. Don't worry about it. The visual effects people didn't even charge us for it.
Yeah, yeah, we're good.
Yeah,
we're
I'll
good.
Just fit it in.
What did you think of the shape-shifting? I thought the effect was pretty cool. It was, it wasn't perfect, but it was probably ahead of its time, and I think it worked for what it needed to do. Did you feel like that, Tom?
I thought it was effective. I, again, watched it
on the internet. I mean, as far through an app, so I don't think I got the quality that I would have gotten through a DVD, perhaps.
Yeah.
But I think it told the story really well.
Because those were some big, heavy special effects shots. Was that like your first like big green screen?
It was just in a big studio, and there are some, what were the flowers called?
Sunflowers.
Sunflowers, or like a handful of, there were some sunflowers there. And, you know, he's just like, I want you to go to the sunflower. I want you to smell it and just smile, and then all of a sudden blood's gonna, and it was just like one take. We had one take with the blood. I mean, that was,
you know, what's really funny is,
you know, the sunflowers have very little smell at all.
Filming that was, I remember had fun doing that stuff. Was
so somebody's car got thrown through a roof. Did you see that?
Yeah, that was badass, wasn't it?
But just when Clark shows, yeah, he shows up to the scene of the crime after he's like, that is so much destruction.
That is so much destruction. Unnecessary.
Just like the pans around, there's a car on the roof.
One person
like
was saved.
At what point does like the National Guard not get called out when cars are getting thrown? And
yeah, it's like we got King Kong on our hands here. Yeah.
I mean, set design was real proud of themselves for that one though.
Objects around the room lift around them. This catches.
By the way, the one that's focused on.
Yeah, the little doll or whatever.
The little alien. It's a green alien guy.
Yeah,
that was definitely not an accident.
Symbolism. Yeah, James probably thought he was genius for that moment. He's like, I got that one. I got an alien.
When that guy turned the pool into ice and when...
And I thought the freezing of the pool was pretty cool. What did you think, Ryan?
Yeah, I thought that looked pretty good. And then, you know, I like that, you know, her foot gets stuck at the end. Again, like, it's another, like, it feels very horror movie-esque.
How did they get the fire out of the sprinklers?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
That must have been digital.
I don't think it was digital.
I don't think they poured gasoline through there and lit it. But, you know,
I don't know. I mean, it looked pretty practical. What do you guys think?
It looked, I don't know. It looked
pretty good.
It did look pretty practical.
Well, I know that there wasn't fire coming out of the sprinklers. That was after the fact.
Unless they had some kind of hoses and I don't know. But if that was an effect, bravo, bro.
Well, this is what we've talked about this before, that finally visual effects were coming to television in that way.
Yeah, it was impressive. Lucky. And Bill Millar was at that point. He did the effects and stuff.
Remember the episode on September 11th was the one where the sprinklers on the football field.
Hothead. We covered that one.
Did they really shoot fire out of those sprinklers?
Yeah, we did. You remember how it smelled? Like... It was gas. We shot some kind of propane or gas out of those sprinklers.
I'm wrong.
I got nauseous. A bunch of crew people got nauseous.
Oh, my God. Horrible. So it really was, because that people were asking those questions. Fans or listeners or co-watchers were calling in, and they were asking us about
Like when you say, why was it chaotic? Just think about that one scene. You know, the effects guys had to figure out, okay, so we have to run water through the line and then on camera switch water off through like 20 sprinklers. And then pump in propane and ignite it, like on camera. Like, that's not a small technical feat.
With people around.
And I don't know whether it was gas or propane, but like a lot of people got nauseous. I got nauseous. It was like pretty gnarly. It stunk, but it looked cool. There was a moment where like a coach, there was a fire or something, and their coach was caught in the car, and we had this door on a wire, and Tom grabbed it and pulled. And I remember kind of making a couple of adjustments to make it better. And then it was like my second or third day of shooting, and Tom pulled the door off the car and threw it. And I remember thinking like, I fucking love this show. This is so cool. I love this show. This is awesome. Like, it was just a job at first, right?
That was pretty intense. Explain those scenes, Tom, when you have a bunch of fire. And I mean, is there a lot of fire going on in the stunt when you're doing it?
Yeah. So what they did a lot of times is they would have some practical fire, and then they would shoot a separate plate and enhance or add some fire after the fact. A lot of that is safety related, because... Though, like that car blowing up, that's probably 8 hours just to do that, because there's so much safety involved. And a lot of the times I just wouldn't even be around for that stuff, because like, why bother you know, I wasn't just going to hang out for 8 hours to see a car blow up.
Right.
Especially if I could go home.
I don't know when Quan was walking out of the coach's office, how he didn't see the fire. Right.
You mean in the torch?
Yeah. And he's just watching and the coach is just watching the fire.
Okay, he lights the TV on fire right behind him. And then he just goes.
Yeah. He's like,
and then he leaves.
Yeah. Then I think he leaves or something.
And he walks right by the fire extinguisher too. I think you can see in the shot.
Yeah. There's no sprinklers going off. There's no.
It's like, you better deal with that.
Principal Quan confronts and suspends Chloe as editor of the Torch for running stories about Smallville being the mutant capital of the world. Do you think he'd really shut down the Torch just for that?
Maybe he's worried that she has a fire ability and will shoot fire out of sprinklers.
Quan almost died with all that stuff.
I need to stop this before it goes too far.
Also, but, just like the amount of things that this poor guy has just witnessed over the past year.
The fires, the bees.
What? I mean, we know what he's talking about with his therapist.
Yeah, I think so.
I saw he's a got man a tough, light everybody's a television.
Like, why is he so mean? Why is he so tough? Imagine, there's a lot going on.
I like Principal Quan. I think, you know, if I met him, I don't think I've ever met him, but if I met him, I'd be like, oh my God. I was really shocked and surprised that Hiro Kanagawa died in this episode.
Well, spoiler alert.
Principal James Quan. Well, we're going to get into it. We're here.
It wasn't his fault.
And it really shocked me that they would kill Principal Quan off. He was a good character. I liked his presence. I just, it's kind of sad seeing him. Like,
I feel like his last moment was finally.
Yeah. Yes.
Because yeah, we
let go. I'm leaving this.
We did just talk about him and give him some props after the last one. After all the stuff that he saw.
Oh,
he goes out hard, man. Oof.
And as far as I know, from at the high school, I feel like he was the only person there. Like, where are the teachers? Where is?
Yeah,
his...
I never saw teachers. Well, you saw teachers every once. Remember Chloe's dad?
But they weren't a part of it. I feel he.
He was a
carried
part
the
of the
burden. He carried the burden.
He yeah. So God bless you. Rest in peace, Principal James Quan. Clark decides to investigate the murder scene at Quan's house and is met by Danny, Quan's son, and the Air Force recruiter at Career Day. We then find out Danny was the driver, and not Principal Quan. However, he knew about it and was protecting his son.
Oh, devastating.
You know what I like, again, is this father-son dynamic. We really get to see Lionel Luthor as a guest star on the show, and he was an integral part of the show, to say the least. And having that dynamic, the father-son dynamic, and does he even care about his son? Does he even, you know, and them always one-upping each other. I like that. We see signs. That's the kind of the beginning. We had a fencing scene from a few episodes ago, and now we have, you know, moments at the plant.
Because it is about family, and you needed a family. I mean, I mean, there was Clark, and I mean, the balance needed to be where you were similar.
Yeah.
So if there were no grown-ups in your life. They needed grown-ups.
Isn't that amazing to think that Lionel Luthor wasn't really supposed to be that big of a part in Smallville? Could you imagine, like Tom said, it would have sort of diminished my character, like his, you know, I think that like he needs that presence to see why he became the way he became.
Sure.
You know, you need to see that backstory. And if you weren't there, I think it'd be a different show.
Clark goes home and he doesn't have his powers anymore. And he's afraid his parents aren't going to love him anymore.
Oh,
and
Jonathan
has
remember
this,
that.
Jonathan has and this it, great thing of like, you know, chances lightning doesn't strike twice. Chances are you're not going to get your powers back, and we still love you. And you're
right. We don't love you because of your special abilities. We love you because of who you are. You're not what you can do. You are who you are. Oh, that was a wonderful underlying message in all of Smallville.
Especially watching this episode because it comes to light. I always felt that Jonathan and Martha spoke to Clark's heart, not to his head and not to his physical abilities. It was like it was getting into the soul choices. And I felt like that was the connection that resonated. And it worked on set. You know what I mean? With everything going around. And it was just like, hey, listen, we're going to focus here. And
it shows you like if you have the right parents to raise you, good people raising you. You know, you become a certain person. Like, you know, obviously Lex becomes who he becomes. He doesn't have the best role model.
There's been people have pontificated on what if the Kents had found Lex after the after the
meteor shower.
Not the tornado. My gosh, yeah, the meteor shower. What if Lionel had raised Clark?
When you stop breaking the stories, you want to make sure that Lex is an integral part of the show. What is his stories per every week? What are you going to do with that? And as Al said, it's like the contrast makes the Kent story more resonate more fully. But I think the Kent relationship is great too. I mean, like John and Annette have incredible chemistry, and it's like he is that like all American guy. He's just the opposite of Lionel, so it's just the perfect.
Yeah. Back in the day, you know, especially on that network on the WB, parents were either clueless and not around, like in Buffy, or they were, as John Schneider aptly put it, the parents were the adults and the adults acted like children, like on Dawson's Creek.
Right.
Which is, he's not wrong. You know what I mean? And so we wanted to do a show where, you know, Clark liked his parents. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like most kids want to like their parents and have a great relationship with them. They're not looking to be antagonistic. Well, so yeah, that was something.
A functional relationship rather than just the opposite of the Luthers. It's a functional parent-child relationship. It doesn't mean they don't have conflict, but it actually, the whole point is they love each other. And I think that's aspirational as well for the audience, is that people dream of that. They want that relationship, that connection with parents. So that was part of it. I think that's part of the allure of Superman.
I think it comes through, obviously, because we go to these conventions and stuff and people come up and they're like, I watch this with my dad. I watch this with my grandfather. It's multi-generational watching. And, you know, you guys did it.
But it was also like a big fight. I mean, people literally said you shouldn't do it. They said, no, it's like this early days before we aired, we had all this like backroom politics with the network and people saying, you know, the parents should be like much more antagonistic and he should hate the parents. And it should be, it's just like much more of the cliche teen drama kind of thing. And we really fought against that.
One of the quick things that Michael and I talk about is we're both older now than you were when you were on Smallville.
And we'll leave you on that. We'll leave you on that.
How old are you? How old are you, Tom?
I'm 45.
And I'm 50.
You believe that?
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Yeah. I had no experience as an actor, right?
Right.
And so a lot of times when you're in a scene with people, you're there's a distance, you know, the actual touching is sometimes not even allowed, if that makes sense. And then for John to reach out and grab my shoulder. You know what I mean? It's like a real thing. I remember being like, oh, wow, that's a real move. Like, that's awesome.
He's directing his motivation. This is what he wants to do.
Because you're really not supposed to touch other people. Because the way he's composing himself, trying to talk to this guy, protecting his son, standing up for him. I feel like he's always just about to just like pounce like a lion on this guy.
Yeah.
This is John Schneider at his best.
I 100% agree. I felt when he slammed Phelan on that table, that was a great moment. I thought his you could tell he was hurt, like this guy's going to hurt my son, and that enraged him. If it's one thing that enrages Jonathan, it's someone messing with his son. Right. And I haven't seen that side of him. Jonathan performs an amazing drift. And exit
with the door open,
drift and exit from this vehicle to go help the crash driver. He pulls him out just before the truck goes up in flames.
Nice. That was, by the way, I remember that being John Schneider's idea. That one, he could turn the. I remember him hearing the discussion where he's like, "Why don't I just slide the car, open up the door, and say it?" And the director was like, "Sorry, what?" Because it was going to be, you know, stop. Roll the window down, yell out the, you know, and John just did it. I didn't remember that this had happened, but that fist on the window, as soon as I saw it when I was rewatching, I remember that was John. John did that.
Really?
And I remember he didn't tell me he was going to do it. And it's, you know, this might sound ridiculous, but in the acting world, you kind of get what I mean. He just did it on his side and they shot him first. He just put his hand up there. And I remember just being like, what, dad, like, you know, like, what do you, okay, like what is this? And then he leans in and he really gets in. I remember being like, this is awesome. Like,
that's great. And you remember
just
that.
Always wanted that connection.
Yeah. John always tried to elevate scenes. He did. And he did elevate scenes.
The little nuance I like in that scene is a callback to the conversation that Jonathan and Martha had, where after all of that, and Jonathan's like, I knew this would happen. He says, I guess we're here to listen. Because of his conversation with his wife. And I thought that was a that shows character and it shows relationships that I think there's a lot of that in this series, which is, I think, why it survived. By the way, how handsome did Lionel look?
He did.
John Glover, when you guys, I know it's toward the end of the episode, when you open up the trunk at the end of the, toward the end of the episode, mm-hmm. how handsome did John look? I mean, that's all I could think about.
He was handsome, those long locks.
Yeah.
But it was that shot in particular. He looked younger. He looked stunning. Fresh.
He did. Yeah. I think because he wasn't working at all on the show. And that was his only scene that he came in. He looked just dynamite.
He did this beautiful thing. And thank you, anyone who's listening. I know we're jumping to the end, but we're excited. When Lex is like, look in the trunk, and he walks over, and he goes, what did you do? What did you do? That's not written. That's him.
What did you do, son?
What did you do? And then he opens up the trunk and obviously he says, you know, well done.
Lionel Luthor arrives in Smallville to give Lex a hard time about having Victoria at the mansion weaseling into Luthor Corp.
This was John Glover at his best. I mean, he's in one scene. He comes in. He just takes all over. And, you know, I love that scene. He's so much fun and so scary, but trying to be loving at the same time. There's so many dynamics to him, but that's John. I mean, if you listen to this podcast enough, I'll always tell you how much I adore him. So this is just another one of those stories. What was more exhilarating, watching John Glover show up on set or walking into the trailer and seeing him in there? Because he always had something happening. You know what I mean? He always had an energy. He always has.
He did. He always just had something going on. So many fun stories with John Glover. It just was always a treat. When you're in a bad mood, he would just go, like, look at this guy who's in a bad mood. And he would kind of laugh.
Are you in a bad mood?
He would laugh. Yeah. Like, okay, we won't talk to Michael. It was just.
And it helps because you acknowledge it and then it disappears.
Yeah, it's kind of like, oh, am I upset? Well, who cares? I'm lucky to be here. He's always up to something. He's like, you know, he's, what can I do that's provocative?
But do you actually recall him asking for that, or just they were there and he picked him up?
I'm sure I said something about it. I'm sure I said, oh, holding those blue balls, huh? And well, I'm sure he made a joke like, oh, blue balls, Lex. Oh.
Well,
but you know what I found out about John Glover is that in the pilot episode, when he came on, I was so intimidated by him and I didn't think he liked me. I was really worried, like, oh my God, I got to work with this fucknut. You know, that's how I felt. But then I confronted him about it later on. I was like,
how did you confront him? You were like, hey, do you like me?
Because I just said, hey, I've always felt like you didn't really like me in the pilot. He's like, no, I was so nervous. I had just gotten the part and I was trying to deal with things. And so a lot, you know, that tells you a lot about like anxiety and life in general. It's sort of like, hey, it's not always about you. And he was going through some stuff, but working with him was just a wonderful experience.
He always brought something to the scenes that you wouldn't have anticipated.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're working with him, he'd always surprise you. It was a gift.
He was always very fun and flamboyant on set too, just bouncing around and having a good time. Later on in the pilot, like I said, he was just in his head and he, like everyone else was, we were like just trying not to get fired and trying to, you know, do a great job.
But he also, I know we're on a John Glover kick right now, but he wasn't easily rattled on set, whether he had to wait, whether he had to go fast. He just was like,
he's a veteran.
He was just like, he's fluid in everything he did.
Yeah, he was a veteran.
I wept when I had to give you electric shock because it was such a horrific thing to have to do to my son.
Oh, God.
But it needed to be done because I loved you so much, my boy. And I don't remember a building laying on top of me. You know, that big thing. I don't remember that.
The pillar of the office of the.
Yes. That looked very painful.
God bless stuntmen. I mean, and women, stunt people, as you would say. They really make us look good. And it's to the point where I've had stunt guys, stunt ladies say, hey, don't tell people it was you who did that. It makes us look better. If they think that, they go, was that you? Say, yeah.
Tom, did you have the same stunt guy the whole time?
Chris Sayre was my stunt guy for many, many, many years.
Tell him what happened to Chris Sayre.
Well, I don't know how much I can say about it. Not that I was any part of it, but I know there's some legal stuff at the end of it all. But he he was on a, he was supposed to come through a building, a warehouse on a decelerator, and the decelerator failed. And he was very, very tragically injured.
He recovered, but it took a long time. I mean, he fell. I want to say he fell 25 or was it 50 feet?
Three or four stories at least.
Did you see it?
No, I wasn't in the room.
What the Thank other thing God. Is,
here's the other thing. Because I had so little time that I didn't work, anytime I could get away from set, I would. So if they're like, oh, we're doing something with the stuntman, I'm like, later.
Yeah.
And I was, even if it was 10, 15 minutes, I would take a walk.
I remember asking so many questions about that for people that were there. And one of them said, I go, what was it like when he hit the ground? He said he was just like,
well, he was broken. He was, in many places.
I was in my trailer. He couldn't
breathe. He's like,
yeah, I knew what they were filming.
Didn't really give it much thought
because everybody was so good at what they were doing. And I heard the ambulance and I was like, what is an ambulance doing here? And then they were like, just stay here. And then like nobody wanted to talk about it. And
it was very tough. Yeah.
But I remember sitting, you know, on the side of the tank with my stunt double and everybody being like, well, we just need to give Michael a second. And I'm like, what? Yeah, I mean, I don't know how any of this
goes. Right.
But all I know is like, if that's what he needs, that's what he's an actor.
Well, what Ryan doesn't know, and maybe I've talked about it, I don't know, but it was a 25 foot tank. And at the bottom, they had the car, the portion there. And what they did was they put me in there and I'd have like an oxygen tank. Yeah. And they would put weights on me to hold me in place. And then
because his character's trapped in the car.
I'm trapped in the car unconscious. So David Nutter would go, okay, Michael, give me a thumbs up if you can hear me. And I'm like, and then you just let us know when you're ready and take the oxygen mask off.
And the guy's like, don't worry, I'll be right over here with your oxygen and, as you're buckled and 10 feet underwater.
Buddy, for the first five takes, I was like, I can't, I gotta get out of here. I gotta get out of here. And I would just swim up to the top and they're like, oh my God. I'm like, Tom, they're going to fire me because I can't do this. I'm so freaked out. And we took a scuba diving. They made us take a scuba course. And so we knew how to do all this, but it was different going 25 feet under, putting something on you. You have nothing. You're just lying there. And then he's got to grab you out of the water and take you. And then it was just, I couldn't wrap my head around him. I was worried. This is it. They're going to fire me. I'm a puss, you know? And somehow we got the take and David said, that was perfect. We're good. My stunt guy, there's the fall, which we'll get into at the end of the episode where I fall into the couch off the top of the Zero Club. 3, 2, 1. He doesn't go. And we stop and go, hey, is everything all right? He goes, I can't do it.
What?
I can't do it.
Can't do your job?
He said, I can't do this fall. I'm going to kill myself. I'm too scared to do this fall. I can't do it.
Well, I'm glad he spoke up. That's good.
And he didn't do it. So we had to get someone else to come in and do that and shave their head and do it.
That day.
Or I think they ended up shooting it like later that night, or they got another stunt guy that came in, shaved his head, put makeup on, and boom. It was kind of crazy.
That second guy must have been happy because you know he was like, how much are we talking about here?
Yeah. And you know what's funny is this guy who couldn't go off and jump off this thing, fall, you know, do a somersault or whatever. I remember he did do a stunt where we're going like 55 miles an hour in a limo and he just opens the door and jumps out.
And jumped out and bumped his head.
And I'm like, you could fucking do that, but you can't jump off a little. It was crazy. He had balls, but like, I think he just froze. We all have those moments in life.
The corn silo.
That had to be kind of like claustrophobic being in there. I mean,
very, very, very dangerous shoot. I remember probably top three most dangerous things we ever did. And I didn't know it at the time. What happens is if something goes wrong and that stuff's coming down and you're in there, you're done. Like you can't really get people out of there.
Yeah, it's hard. You die pretty quickly. You just can't breathe. Yeah, that was pretty creepy. It made me uncomfortable. Lana steals Lex's car and goes to fulfill her greatest desire, climbing a windmill. Near the top, Lana falls into a daze and Clark catches her before she hits the ground.
So one of the things I remember about that is, so that windmill was out there. And like, it's a windmill. And you're like, okay. And they made such a safety issue of being up there and sitting there. What you'll see at the end is that we sit up there, not to ruin it if you haven't seen the episode, but... And they had these harnesses and they were strapping us down. And because of all the anxiety of safety, I started to get nervous.
Really?
I was like, you know, because I mean, it's up there. It's high, but it's not like, you know, 60 stories high. I remember climbing up there and then being like, be careful. And they were like, they were being so careful that I'm like, am I missing something here? Like, is this thing going to fall down? Like, what's happening?
Well, on set, don't you guys have like that one person who's like the safety officer, and they're just, they're very, very passionate about their job.
They should be. They should be.
And they, I mean, rightfully so, but they do make things a little bit more intense. Like if there's like, even like some prop that's like kind of like half dangerous.
There's this really great story. There's this really great story, which I'm sure everybody's already heard it, but Matt Damon tells this story about when he's talking to Tom Cruise and he asks about this one stunt. He goes, how did you get away with that? And Tom Cruise is like, well, I remember discussing it and describing what I want to do with the safety guy. And he said, no way, that is way too dangerous. And Matt Damon's like, so what'd you do? He goes, I got another safety guy.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And he kept going until he found somebody to say, yeah, you could do that.
I tried to convince my wife that when the Porsche hits Clark and flies in the water, I tried to convince her that I did that stunt.
Nice. Nice.
And I was like, we got it on the first take. She's like, that's not you. And I'm like,
well, you know what? I would think, you know, as we go along and we'll see some other episodes, they're definitely in the beginning. I was like, no, I'll do my own stunt. I'll do this. And I remember falling. I remember hurting myself. I'll let your fucking stunt guy do their job.
And
don't be a
hero. They get paid for each stunt they do. Exactly. So every time an actor says, I'll do it, the stuntman's like, yeah, great.
Look, this could be in the direction. Okay. This is the direction. If I'm a director, I don't want somebody to come off corny and more of a caricature.
You know, when you're doing the show and you're in the middle of it, I don't think you ever have any realization what it means to the rest of the world. And as I've gone on out into the world after Smallville and I work on other shows, I'll have like a B camera second assistant come up to me and is like, you worked on Smallville? And like, you know, I'll offer them like a crew t-shirt and it changed. I've had people come up and say it changed their lives. I know
they don't say that about Flash. They don't say that about Green Arrow. They don't. You know what I mean?
It was iconic. It was iconic, and the emotion and it really is was such a privilege to be a part of.
It's also been 21 years. So those 5-year-olds who watched it are now working for you.
That was the first show I ever produced, and I now have produced 10 shows. But it's without a doubt the closest to my heart. Because, you know, things have happened on that show that never happen anymore. Like, it was like, okay, like on Thursday nights, the night that the show aired, we'd stop work in the production office and we'd go into like one of the offices and like everybody would like sit on the couch and watch the show together.
Yeah.
So like the production office team would like watch the show together. Everybody.
I miss the time we spent there. I'm seeing it's probably because of this podcast, but I'm seeing a resurgence in Smallville interest, at least with regard to my experience there. So I think it's fantastic. You know, it's a shining light. It's going to sound corny, but you know me, I'm a little corny. It's a shining light in all of certainly Warner Brothers television history. And I do believe that Smallville was responsible for starting this whole, or authenticating this whole superhero craze.
Absolutely.
I think Smallville was the first, really, truly the first show that got it all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great because I got great stuff to play and they started listening to me.
Did you like getting recognized as Lionel, or were you like, oh, I wish they'd recognize me from this or this, but they recognize me as this guy from this show?
You know, toward the end, when they recognized me, several of them would say, listen, we can't figure this out. Are you supposed to be a good guy or a bad guy?
That's what
and
you
that's
hear.
One of the best compliments an actor can get. Absolutely. So I thought it was terrific.
You got to be self-aware about this stuff, right? You can't take it too seriously, but also at the same time, you can't just, I mean, there's a lot of true things to talk about. And I think you guys have a good balance of hitting on, oh yeah, this is a cool behind the scenes thing that happened. People might not know about, and here's a fun story. And you know what? This is a good emotional scene, but also this is pretty ridiculous, right? We can all agree on this. And so that's, you got to have that good balance. And I think you guys are doing a great job, and it's so fun to, cause I've been to a few conventions, a handful that you guys have been to. And, I feel like you've kind of bottled that and put it into this, like that same kind of vibe, which at least speaking for myself, I really think is great.
Yeah, but I'll say to that, Al, that we didn't think we were going to supply four seasons.
No, that's what we didn't think would happen. Yeah.
We still do live in fear of being kicked off all our stuff.
And I thank you, Tom and I both thank you for, I mean, the careers we have are because of you guys. You really gave us the opportunity. And
there were ups and downs at the beginning, but what I do know from a core perspective is that you guys, like when I look back on some of the things, it's not that you guys were right, but you guys were like, you had the right, like you guys were making it good.
They cared.
And I've taken that on from you guys. So thank you.
What was the sign off now? We had
always remember Talkville.
Always remember Smallville.
Always hold on to Talkville.
Always hold. That's it. Always, 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 always,
always hold on to Smallville.
Always hold on to Smallville.
Always hold on to Smallville, folks. All right. Now it's time for the, how can we forget you? The patrons. The patrons make this podcast possible. Tom, we know that. We love you. It's the holidays. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Bryce has worked so hard. Our producer and editor, Jason, they've worked so hard on this show. If you watch the episode, the editing and the, it's crazy. It's just, it's awesome. Get people to watch it. Thanks for being a patron. Join patreon.com/talkville and continue to support the podcast. We see tons of patrons this last weekend in Pittsburgh.
I was just going to say we were in Columbus and it was like 5, 7, 8. It was like awesome.
It was awesome seeing all the patrons and they love, and they're wearing Talkville sweatshirts and Talkville shirts and Talkville mugs and
Smallville Nights. They're hitting that up.
I love it. Go to TalkvillePodcast.com for all the merch and stuff for the holiday needs. Here we go. This is the best of shout outs of patrons. Nikki G, Leanne P, Raj C, Janine R, Santiago. I love that guy. He helps us so much. Leah S. Hi. Little Lisa, Tom T, and Sophie M.
Betsy D, Liliana A.
Yes, got it.
I did it right?
Yes.
Abby P, Chris F, Kimberly E, Michael H, Rod.
Ray. Remember Ray? She was pregnant. We saw her in Columbus.
That's right.
That's Ray.
She was speaking Japanese.
Konnichiwa. Ogagideska. Yeah. She came to Smallville Nights that you guys have to go to when we're in town doing one. And she did.
She was speaking Lex in Japanese.
It was amazing. All right. Ray H, go.
Ray H, Karen M, Danielle B, 99 more, Lilani N, Catherine P, Brett G, Super Sam, Always Hold On to Smallville, Estevan G, GJ, Kento, Twitch, Garrett W, Kimberly L, Justin S, Tom N, Tony V, Rodolfo V, Jason W, Osama A, Lana W, Nancy D,
Brian G, Sarah W, Artoon K, Justin T, and Lucy O, Grape Jelly 817, Jeremy G, Amanda R, Teddy 127, Michael P, Theo M, Ryan R, Grumpy Itis, Jordan M, Hillary B, Craig G, Christy R, Pollyanna, Karen P, Derek G, Jarell.
It was only a matter of time.
I know. I slipped up.
Richard S, Heather and Greg, Nico P, I made Talkville say
bus.
Brian H, Georgina B, Eric K, Kristen B, Takashi M, Kevin E, and Nanin W.
Oh, yeah. Stephanie K, Darth Achilles, Richard R, Finky, Kenny S, Sydney S, Tito G, Remix, Stephen F. Damn, who's that? Jeanette E, Deadvid, Allison H, General Zod, Amara, and Ev, Theodore, It's K. Now look at this.
Crack.
We thought it was crack. Do you know what it is? It's Clark spelled backwards. That's an L.
I thought it was going to be Cruick.
I think it's Clark backwards.
It is.
Drew M. Go.
Shouldn't the K be backwards? Anyway. what's this one?
Aristeles?
Is that a new one?
Aristeles?
Thank you. Thank you for joining. Aristeles. Big D, John Glover's Luscious Maine, Doug R, Tommy Z, Boston 68, Stone Age, Isabel, Gabe V, Sager S, Jack G, Corey L, Ivy and Sam, Brittany W, Kate F, Mr. Home Arcade, Cal T, Amanda K, Jesse C, Jason Lumberjack, Claire M, fourth favorite character, Zoe.
Oh, hang on.
What is that?
Fourth favorite character _ Zoe. Say at Pittsburgh this last weekend, okay. There's the cutest little girl, and her name was Zoe. And
little Zoe from Columbus, the little one with her dad.
Oh yeah, that was with you.
Yeah, that was Columbus.
Columbus. And she said, "Who's your favorite character?" And I go, "Where am I?" And she goes, "I go, who's first?" She goes, "Lana." And I go, "Who's second?" Chloe. I go, "Who's third?" Clark. "Who's fourth?" Lex. And by the end of the weekend, so I was like,
"Thank
number.
You for joining, Zoe. You were like our spirit animal that weekend."
But she did say her first favorite in person was me.
That's a lie.
Probably.
Scott S. Freddie G. I appreciate all of you. Thank you so much.
Aracelis R. Arakelis. Well, one day we'll figure it out. We love you. Couldn't do it without you. We've got a great season 2 coming up. Thanks to you, the patrons. We want to keep this going. So keep supporting us if you can. And by just listening, spreading the word, that's the biggest thing. And all right, Tommy, talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
See ya.